Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Stud Finder by L.B. Dunbar. Narrated by Tyrin Wilder and Tor Tom. 1. Rita.
"You," I hiss, glaring at the most annoying man I've ever met. And I've met plenty of annoying men. Of course, not all of them were hunky, smirky, sexy silver foxes, but that was neither here nor there. I am standing here, and he is sitting there.
You are in my spot.
This is the third time this week he's encroached on my couch in the Busy Bean Cafe, and three strikes means you're out, handsome. Taking a moment, the offender blinks before narrowing his bluest of blue eyes and glares back at me. For a second, I wonder if I have something on my face. Maybe chocolate in the corner crease of my lips, or lettuce in my teeth from lunch. What the frick is he staring at? Then he blinks again and slowly leans forward. His porn-worthy forearms rest on his widespread thighs as he glances up at me. Since I think he's about to stand from the place where he's perched, I speak.
Thank you.
My mother taught me manners, even if I sometimes lacked the use of them. Especially on this occasion, where a hunky, smirky, sexy silver fox who is the most annoying man I've ever met is sitting in my spot on the plush peach couch in my favorite coffee shop. He stops moving at my gratitude and turns his head slowly left to right. Then he swivels at the waist right to left, exaggerating his motions as if he's searching for something over his shoulders. Did he forget something? Did he drop his phone? His hand moves to his side and smooths over the velvety cushion, stroking it like the soft texture is a pleasure fabric or a preferred pet. My mouth waters for some reason, because his movements might match that of him caressing a woman, taking his time to sculpt along her thighs, maybe glide over her backside, stroke the inside of her legs and...
Just what are you doing?
He's taking too long to move it. I'm looking for a sign that says this seat is taken. Turning that edgy face upward, beaming those blue headlights at me, he crooks the corner of his mouth in the smirkiest of smirks. But as I don't see one, nor do I see your name on this couch, I think I'll stay. He falls back against the couch as if he's dropping onto a mattress, tossing himself down into the fluffiest of pillows to catch his hard body in a cushion of heaven. His arms stretch wide to encompass the length of the couch back. He even sighs. A long, lush, deep groan of pleasure emits from him while his eyes close for a second. Then he inhales. When his lids flip open, he spears me in place. That does not stop my mouth. Look, handsome, this is my spot. Everyone knows it's my spot. Think Norm in Cheers, where everybody knows his name. This is where I sit. I shouldn't have called him handsome. He probably already knows he is. In fact, I'm certain he knows he's good-looking. I don't know how he even faces himself in the mirror every morning. He's that good-looking. I'm curious if everyone is always glad you came. His eyes narrow at me, and I ignore the emphasis he's put on a certain term. I will not fall for these kinds of wordplay games, nor will I falter under the curl of his sassy mouth. Even the crinkle of his nose as he enunciated that word was hot. Of course, they're always glad I'm here, occupying my spot. My voice hardens as my fists clench at my sides. I've had a day, and I just want to sit in my happy place and sip some coffee. Is the Busy Bean the most convenient spot for me to haunt? No, it is not. But I've been to worse places. Been there, done that, and I will not be going back. I live halfway between Colberry and Montpelier, where my law office is located, and coming here is out of my way most days. But today is one of those days when I need my spot and a good cup of dark roast, and I do not need this hunky, smirky, sexy silver fox glaring back at me. or his fine backside taking up residency on my couch.
Get a grip, Rita.
Technically, I don't own the couch or the right to claim this space as mine. The Busy Bean Cafe is owned and operated by Audra Shipley and Zara Rossi, both excellent businesswomen. They've taken this quaint location on the old gin mill property and made it into something special. With brick-red walls and chalkboard-painted beams overhead, the creaking wooden floors and eclectic mixture of furniture begs a person to come in and linger, which is what I do, often. Not to mention, the coffee is divine. The dark roast is a special blend introduced to the place a while back, and the addition of delicious cupcakes on the menu from Oh for Heaven's Cakes makes this place more than just a coffee house. It's heaven in Vermont. It's my heaven, and the devil himself is sitting here. Jake Drummond is his name, actually, but that's semantics to me. He's quickly becoming a huge thorn in my side. What are you even doing here? I snap, although I might know the answer. The local Catholic church hosts an AA meeting soon, and perhaps he'll be attending it. Internally, I bitterly laugh at the thought. This man does not take Alcoholics Anonymous seriously. Jake peers around the room, exaggerating his observation once again before lifting a coffee mug. I'm enjoying the local brew. My eyes narrow at him, and I try to ignore the sharp edge to his cheeks, plus the layer of scruff that is a mix of gray and black blended to perfection against the cliff of his jaw. His short-cropped hairstyle matches that stubbly facial mixture. Despite his face looking young, the crinkles near his eyes and the tightness to his mouth give away the fact he's easily over 40, like me. In comparison, the wrinkles on my neck and the graying strands of hair weaving their way through my mousy brown mop make me look older than I am some days. While the indents near my eyes are often called laugh lines, I'm well aware their presence is from stress and glaring at people, like this man, who knows he's handsome, full of charm, and giving off a vibe that makes me want to tackle him to said couch and have my way with him. A shaky hand comes to my forehead. What I really need is to get laid, but it's been so long I don't know what that is anymore. Why do we even call it getting laid? I can do it standing up. I can do it on a bus. I can do it against a door. I can do it on the floor. I can stop rhyming in my head like a sexually deprived Dr. Seuss fan. His sapphire eyes stare at me, and silence lingers as if he asked me something and I've taken too long to answer. Did you say something?
Nope.
He pops the P sound and lowers his lips for the brim of his coffee mug, taking his time to sip at the heavenly dark roast. As I'm easily distracted by the scruff surrounding his mouth, I notice the rich red color of his lips and wonder if they taste as candy sweet as they look. Probably more like a red-hot cinnamon drop. Fine, I grumble, turning away from the plush peach couch I longed to sit on and step back to the counter. Roddy, give me a dark roast to go and one of those dark horse mochaccino cupcakes. I glance back at Jake, who is watching me. Turning back to Roddy, I add, better make it a double on the cupcakes. I need something sweet to rid the bad taste in my mouth. I glare back at Jake, squeezing my entire face like a child sticking out her tongue at my nemesis. I don't know what it is about Jake, but something about him raises the hackles on my neck and dampens my underwear at the same time. As Roderick pours my coffee and sets my cupcakes in a bag, my foot taps impatiently. I'm a bundle of nerves and need to get out of here if I can't sit here to relax. Two dark horse mochaccino cupcakes and a dark roast for the plush peach couch defender. Roderick winks at me before eyeing the man hogging my spot. Next time I come in here, he better not be taking up space in my place. Roderick laughs. Now, Rita, as much as we love you, you know we can't reserve you a spot, nor will we kick patrons out if they sit there first. Jake can hear Roderick from his seat, and he lifts his mug to salute Roddy's words. Well, we'll just see about that, I snap, preparing for battle over a set of cushions in a coffee house.
I look forward to the challenge,
Jake mocks from his seat on said couch. And then he has the audacity to wink at me. He winks. Quickly, I turn my back on the hunky, smirky, sexy silver fox and strut across the wooden planks to exit the busy bean. Only as I use my backside to push the door open, I glance back at Jake Drummond once more and find him watching me with those cinnamon-hot lips quirked up on one side. And I realize he's going to be difficult to ignore, as he recently started to work with me.
2. Jake. That Rita Kaplan is a pain in my ass. Not only would she not sign off on my meeting sheet a week ago, but she is the supervisor where I work. And now she's staking claim to some antique piece of furniture in a coffee shop. She's insane. And something about her makes me want to push all her buttons. Push her and her buttons right up against a wall and fuck some sense into her. Jesus, Jake. I swipe a hand down my face and fall back on the cushions, not realizing how tense I've been in her presence. The tension is due to my absence on the sex scene, and the need to expel some seriously pent-up energy soon. Only problem is not many women are interested in an ex-arson investigator, ex-convict, and ex-husband. The final ex doesn't really define me, but it fits with all the other things I've been exed out of in the last decade. With a shaky hand, I lift the coffee mug of dark roast to my lips and sip. In my opinion, people do not appreciate good coffee enough. I get it, they'll pay exorbitant amounts for a decent brew, but do they actually savor the flavor, the satisfaction, and the downright joy of drinking a good cup of coffee? I know I didn't until I had to live with the piss-poor sludge served in the state penitentiary. As far as prisons go, it wasn't the worst. It wasn't riddled with gang warfare and boyfriend swapping like I've heard of in other places. This was Vermont. We're all grunge-happy, ice-cream royalty, organic farming, and woodland animal safety. Cue the bitterness of being trapped like an animal for 7 long fucking years. Taking a deep breath, I remind myself I'm free. I'm liberated from schedules and constraints, and someone telling me when I can shower, shit, and watch television. I'm able to be me, only I no longer know who that is. I'm also not 100% unshackled. I still have the mandatory parole period, including enforced work placement and required AA meetings. It's a cross I'll bear to get me to the other side. True freedom and possible escape from Vermont. As soon as I'm done with the remainder of my time, I am out of here, said with all the lackluster gangster in me. I want to be so far gone from this place, this state, and all the haunting memories. The thought saddens me, as I'm finally able to see my brother without a partition between us, or a supervisor watching over me as we sit at a folding table in cold chairs. Soon, I will see my nephew, who is no longer a teenager, but a grown adult. Rory has come far despite the fumbles and foils of 2 men trying to raise a reckless boy into a good man. Just this summer, he'll be graduating from law school. My heart fills with pride while bittersweet over Rory's accomplishments. So much had been sacrificed to ensure he became more than his father or myself. Willing away thoughts of things I cannot change, I brush my hand over the velvety-worn material on this ugly couch and chuckle. Rita returns to my mind. Who does that woman think she is? Thinking she holds the rights to a piece of furniture in a public coffee house? The first time I met Rita Kaplan was at an AA meeting a week ago. The local church hosts them in their basement, and as part of my parole, I must attend. It's bullshit if you ask me, and my behavior illuminates my attitude about attendance.
We have someone new with us tonight. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your story?
Rita's cheerful voice was like nails on a chalkboard, but it was her eyes that scratched me. We'd only crossed gazes, but it felt like she saw into the depths of my soul. Or maybe it was just the glare of her eyeglasses under the fluorescent lighting. At least, that's what I told myself, after her bright blue eyes pinned me to the folding chair. Yeah, I'm not ready to share, I'd stated while slouching in my seat. My voice came out rougher than I intended, but I was not used to speaking with others.
How about at least a name? She asked, coaxing me like an encouraging schoolteacher. Her smile was warm enough, and it drew my eyes to her lips. Instantly, I wondered what her mouth would feel like against mine. I also had other ideas where she could put those lips on me. She was not my type, though, and I shifted in the cold metal seat to disguise the simi I was sporting. Chalking the disturbing reaction up to the fact I hadn't been with someone in 7 years. Yeah, I had that 7-year itch, all right, and I needed to scratch it hard. Jake. When I offered nothing more, she glanced down at a clipboard on her lap like that singular name was enough to recognize me. Certain my parole officer had notified the local authorities of my residency, along with the local support groups of my requirements. I surmised this woman had heard of me. She smiled sweetly, but also with a knowing eye. I was not going to participate. No sob story would be pouring out of me, nor was I sharing my experience with alcohol. I didn't have a problem, which is the first thing an alcoholic would say. The truth is, I really didn't. When I was arrested, I was drunk and fought off the officer, thus adding disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and intent to harm an officer to my sentence. As I knew Frank Stucco, the charges of belligerence were dropped, but the alcohol consumption increased in jail. I got caught with the contraband. Forget how I got it. It only mattered that I was caught with it, just like the sentence I served for arson. Forget how it happened. I was the man caught at the scene of the crime with too many connections and no alibi. After 45 minutes of a feisty woman wearing red-rimmed glasses glaring at me, the meeting ended, and Rita confronted me. I know your type. The bold directness did nothing to dispel the full hard-on I had by the meeting's conclusion. I tuned out the sad stories and turned on my own imagination about this vixen and what she could do to me wearing only those eyeglasses. Naughty schoolteacher? Dirty librarian? I wasn't going to be particular in my fantasy. Ironically, nothing else about Rita called her my type. Sandy brown hair with heavy strips of gray. Wrinkles at the corner of her eyes, the mocking set of her mouth when she falsely smiled. Still, she was instantly under my skin, and again I attributed it to those eyes, blue and bright behind her glasses, and a hefty dose of need to get laid. "And what's my type?" I sassed back. "You're not taking this seriously." Fisted hands came to her hips, which had my gaze falling to them. She was petite, with a combination of granola hiker and uptight businesswoman in her appearance. The hiking boots did not go with the fitted skirt and silky blouse she wore. "Listen, sweetheart, you'll learn real fast that I don't take anything seriously anymore." I didn't. I couldn't. But nothing I said surprised her more than one word. "Sweetheart?" Literally, the most unattractive nasal sound honked between us. "I am not your sweetheart." I shook my head at her disgruntled tone and did the most unnatural thing for me. With my fingertip, I bopped her on the tip of her pert nose. "Then if you just sign off on this sheet, no one needs to be the wiser, and I can be out of your hair." It was a risk asking this stranger to place her signature along the 10 lines of my required meetings. I could get in big trouble if she tattled, telling my parole officer I tried to cheat the system. Rita shook her head, adamantly dismissing my request. "No can do, handsome. Maybe you'll learn something by being here." I couldn't imagine what I'd possibly get out of listening to others tell their tales. I'd heard worse. So much worse inside prison. I didn't need some bored housewife telling me how she drank in the middle of the afternoon while she watched soap operas. Or some local business owner sneaking shots behind his cash register. "Handsome, huh?" I mocked, matching her false smile with a teasing smirk of my own. At one time, I knew how to hook a woman. Flirting had landed me my ex-wife, but I didn't waste my time with thoughts of Lisa, and I would never flirt with Rita Kaplan. She will not hold my heart, be sweet on me, or anything other than be a pain in my ass. To top it all off after that meeting, I find Rita as the supervisor on the job where I've been stationed the following day. It's some restorative justice bullshit, where I right the wrongs of the things I've done. I'd believe in it more if I thought I'd done something wrong that needed to be righted. On that note, I finish my coffee enjoying the subtle noise of a busy cafe around me while I sit in solitude. I'll never take for granted being alone again. And while I've longed for decent company, I've grown accustomed to the silence. However, when a dark-haired beauty enters and orders the most complicated drink I've ever heard, I decide she's the company I might like to keep. At least for an hour or two.
3. Rita.
The couch thief, I snap as Jake Drummond reports for work at Building Buddies, my passion project, the next day. The not-for-profit organization builds homes for those in need in the Vermont, New Hampshire area. It's a program I've been dedicated to for over a decade and remain committed to in memory of my father, who stressed the need to give to others less fortunate. When I was 10, Dad taught me how to wield a hammer and work a power saw as we built my tree fort. As I grew older, I used my skill set to devote time to this worthy cause. As a part of the Building Buddies' commitment to helping others, we take on workers needing reacclimation into society from hardship, namely the prison system or drug rehabilitation centers. We offer manual labor, which provides tangible completion of a project, allowing our recruits to see what they've done for someone else. The hope is production gives former inmates a sense of accomplishment. In addition, we teach trade skills that can lead to jobs in construction, landscape, design, and utility services. It gives me great pride to be a member of the board and an active participant in the building projects themselves. I'd heard of Jake Drummond before I met him at the site. We'd been prepped as to who he was. Prison sentence for arson. Prior work as an electrician. We didn't allow prejudice to mar our selection. We also didn't want to form preconceived notions, so we don't inquire further into a person's backstory. If said person wanted to share his history, we listened, but it wasn't a requirement. He was here to do a job in an effort to rebuild himself while constructing a home or facility for others. It was a fresh start at a new future, not a flashback to his tainted past. Unfortunately, I had a niggling sensation about Jake, and it counteracts the tingling feeling between my thighs when I look at him. The arson conviction alone raised hackles on my neck. However, giving second chances is the cornerstone philosophy of Building Buddies, so I ignored those fine hairs tickling my nape. The lacking warm fuzzies began after our first introduction, where he dismissed the beliefs of Alcoholics Anonymous while attending the meeting I chaired. The final straw was sitting on my couch at the Busy Bean. "I've been called worse," he teases in reference to the couch thief accusation. "Blanket hog. Pillow thief." He gives me that smirk of a grin at the bedding references, and my face heats. Instantly, I imagine him naked under blankets, or with his head on a pillow facing me. I do not want to be attracted to him, but I recognize that I am on a physical level. I cannot deny a handsome man being handsome, but I do not like his attitude. He knows he's good-looking. The dimples alone prove it. Not that I can fault the dimples, but still, his smile reeks of sex and sinful things. Too bad the scent is overpowered by his attitude that stinks like burnt coffee and poor decisions. Huh. I ignore him, glancing over the day's spec sheet, although I'm unable to focus enough to read a thing. Jake's nearness distracts me. In reality, he smells good. All spicy male mixed with the scent of fresh sawdust and outdoor springtime. And I shiver. I don't know how I'll make it through the day. Thankfully, the studs are up and the roof tapped down on this house. Today's order includes window installation and hardwiring the electricity, which is Jake's assignment, as electrical work was listed as part of his skill set. I'm here to supervise. To his credit, Jake is a diligent worker. He jumped in immediately upon his arrival. He's early to work and does additional jobs we don't ask of him, like picking up garbage and scraps at the end of the day. "Let me make the couch sing up to you. I'll buy you a coffee the next time I'm sitting on it." The implication is clear. If our paths should cross again in the bean, he'll be taking, and keeping, my seat on the sofa. How about if you just move your fine... Just move the next time you see me. My traitorous eyes roam his body as I speak, taking in the way his faded jeans dip on his hips, weighted down by a tool belt, and how the fit of his flannel hugs his chest. Jake runs hot, so he'll have that thing off soon enough, giving me a show with the tight T-shirt he wears underneath the outerwear.
You want to see my moves? Jake teases.
Bending his arms before his chest, he tips his head forward and sways his hips. Holy sticky maple syrup. Jake starts to dance to some song in his head, and a playlist of music runs through mine, which includes Afternoon Delight and Let's Get It On. Quickly, I turn away from the subtle thrust of his pelvis, slowly tapping left to right. However, those eyes of mine have their own mind, and my gaze drifts back to him, watching as he lowers his lids and bites his bottom lip. If he moves like that when he... and looks like that when he... I'd let him steal my pillow, take the blankets, and have the damn couch. Okay, Michael Jackson, I snap, more aggressively than necessary.
Michael Jackson?
His head pops up as he stills his dance.
I'm insulted. That was my best Chase Rice doing Ride. Michael Jackson dates you a bit.
He chuckles, but his humor hits a sore spot for me. I'm newly 43, never been married, never had children, and I'm sensing a midlife crisis coming on. Not that the crisis is like a common cold or anything. It can't be detected by aches, chills, fever, stuffy nose, and the like. It's more a feeling inside me that I need a change in my life. It's time. Well, Chase Rice called, and he wants his groove back. Jake laughs harder.
Rita, you're a hoot.
Speaking of dating oneself, who calls anyone a hoot nowadays?
Who's dating?
Sullivan Vance interrupts us, and I'm grateful for the intrusion from our construction manager. Sullivan is a burly guy, complete with bristlebrush beard and unruly dark hair under his knit cap. Everything about him is typical Vermont, and kind of cute, but nothing that attracts me enough to give in to the constant dates he's asked of me.
Rita wants to date Michael Jackson, Jake states,
and Sullivan glances a little wide-eyed and hurt at me.
Is he new around here?
His dark eyes show he's seriously questioning me. Jake snorts before covering his mouth with a fist, pretending to cough. Never mind, Sully. We don't have all day to dance. Let's get to work, I state, going into supervisor mode. I have a 1 o'clock court time, so I need to finish here by noon. Jake starts humming whatever tune he had in his head, and I make a mental note to find that song and give it a listen. In the meantime, Sullivan leads the way to the house we're building for a family of four who lost theirs this past winter in a fire. Jackie and Bob applied for our assistance after Bob lost his job. They didn't have enough homeowners insurance for the damage done to their house, and one of their children has extensive medical bills. By noon, we have a few windows installed. The electrical wiring is still on the docket, and Jake will take the lead while Sully assists. I need to head out, I tell Sullivan, and he nods, but I'll be back after court. This turns Jake's head in my direction.
What are you going to court for?
I'm an attorney by day. Some people consider my law practice fledgling, and I never know if that's a compliment or an insult after all this time. Mae Shipley's my partner, and I love her energy for the law. Although she started out with the typical real estate contracts and farm disputes when I brought her on, I've handed over more and more of my client list and prospective cases. I've been a lawyer for almost 20 years, and I've loved it. Taking over Kaplan and Associates, now Kaplan and Shipley, from my father was an honor and a necessity. But I'm lacking luster with the same old thing. I brought May on with the intention that one day she could take over the practice in its entirety, although I've never given her a specific start date to my retirement. 43 seems too young to retire. Even though I recognize a need for renewed passion in something, I'm not certain what I'll do with the next half.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?